This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You need surgery.
Bisexuality.
Bisexual.
The best of both worlds.
Triple bypass
on Joy 94.9.
You're on Triple Bypass here at Joy 94.9. I'm Ruby.
I'm Anthony.
And I'm Christina, trying to butt in as usual.
And we've got a pretty special guest today. We are joined by C.S. Bacat, fantasy author, queer writer, and general pretty snazzy dresser. You guys can't see, but she's dressed pretty well.
Yay.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us, Kat.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me on the show. It's like quadruple bypass tonight.
It is.
It is. 2% chance of survival.
Yay. It's not bad.
No, not bad at all. It's regular bisexual. So, yeah, we are back. Thanks for tuning in. Now, we did notice, of course, and some of you may have heard, there was a bit of an incident at Joy last Tuesday, but we got on the air because you can't keep us invisible. They try.
They tried very hard
to keep the buyers invisible, but can't do it. No man can keep us down.
We're too strong.
We are.
But now we're here to talk about fun things like fantasy.
Fantasy.
We all have fantasies, don't we?
Yes, but we're talking about the genre.
Yes,
the literature.
and that's what I'm interested in. Yes.
Of course.
So more dragons, less dildos, kind of a thing.
I wasn't referring to dildos. Where are you going with this?
Oh, dragons and dildos. It's a whole new concept in my head.
It's not a new concept. There's an entire website where you can buy plenty of them.
Oh, wow.
I know these things. I'm the deep, dark secrets of the internet. And on the internet, I stumbled across some books, the Captive Prince trilogy, which were being raved about by a lot of women on the internet for being fantastic queer books. And so I ordered them all on Amazon, read them all in a few days, and now the author's sitting right next to me and I'm quite excited.
She's fangirling a bit, actually.
What else is new? So the main character in your books is bisexual, and you identify as bisexual. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Firstly, welcome.
Hooray!
To the
fold. Another one.
So glad to have you here. What led you to wanting to write queer fantasy?
I grew up in the 90s, and that was a time when queer fantasy was really thin on the ground. You could pretty much read all three or four books of queer fantasy that there were and turn the last page and then kind of think, well, what's next? But then there wasn't anything else.
There was no next.
Yeah, there was no next. And I have really strong memories of encountering kind of the first bisexual character in fantasy, or at least genre fiction ever, which was Lestat from Anne Rice's Vampire Chronicles. And just sort of, when you see yourself in fiction, it's really electric in a way that no other type of character is. Something about the way that she wrote queer sexuality. She wrote it very unapologetically at a time in the 80s and 90s where often in literature, queerness and oppression were always linked, so that if you saw a queer character, they were being oppressed in some way, or they were dealing with some kind of shame about their sexuality that they had to work through or whatever. But she just wrote this bisexual character that was extremely sort of liberated, totally unabashedly bisexual. And that was something that was really important to me, but that I didn't find enough of.
It's funny, you don't even know you're looking for it that you didn't have it until you find representation. And you're just like, oh my God, that person's just like me.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
Did you guys have any similar characters that you kind of attached to when you were growing up with it?
Not so much when I was growing up, but the first bisexual, openly, flagrantly beautiful bisexual character I came across was Jonathan Harkness from Doctor Who.
Ooh, yes.
Wow. That's quite late.
It's quite late. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm quite older. So.
I just meant
I like telling that joke.
That's a very recent character in the scheme of things.
Yeah, in the scheme of things. Before that, I had never seen in what you'd call mainstream television a positive bisexual role that wasn't the tragic character that didn't end up dying at the end, or wasn't the serial killer that ended up, dying at the end or anything. It was like this positive guy who was just like, yep, I like girls and I like guys. And it was,
he just likes everybody.
Oh, and he's awesome. I was just like, oh. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just really drawn to anyone that was not straight, whether that was television or movies or whatever. There was something that I could relate to, and I sort of harped on or focused on that particular character. But just when you talked about sort of reading that book and sort of when this sort of style of writing and sort of really being immersed in the world of the writer, you know, where they want you to be as you're reading the book, do you think? I mean, I was hearing that as something fairly political. She wrote that during a time where nobody was really writing that way. Mm. I mean, that's making quite a statement in a fairly conservative writing culture.
Yeah, I think so. And I think fantasy, for all that word implies, does tend to still be like quite a conservative genre at times. You would think that this is a genre in which you could sort of describe every possible iteration of what it means to be human. But instead, you know, so often I've found that queer characters in fantasy for a long time, like, either we were like subtextual subterranean Dumbledores, or we were like Loras Tyrell from the Game of Thrones TV series, which is like gay and present, but all of the oppressive structures that exist in our world have been imported wholesale into this fantasy world for no reason, which gives this impression that, you know, queerness and oppression are interlinked, will always be interlinked, that it's something that's just transhistoric. Even in fantasy landscapes, queer people are always going to be oppressed. Mm. Whereas I think what was really radical about Anne Rice was that she kind of let go of that a little bit and just had her queer characters existing unapologetically.
And what I loved about Kat's books, as I was explaining before, was that it was my first time reading a fantasy world where there was no semblance of the patriarchal kind of structure we live in, or of, like, you know, in fact, one of the, like, the countries that are in the books, the big stigma is around having illegitimate children. So people actually, it's more accepted to sleep with someone of the same sex because there's no risk of impregnation outside of marriage. So most people are in couples with people of the same sex because they don't want to have to deal with children. And it was still, like, you know, a form of constriction and oppression, but in a, such a different way. And it was just so interesting to read a whole different look at this as societally structures in a way where being, like, you know, it wasn't even about being gay or being straight. It was just what was okay and what wasn't. Mm. And it was very different to what we live in now. And I was like, well, why has it taken so long for us to even think maybe we should expand outside what we're doing right now?
Most definitely. Well, look, if you're wanting to get in contact with us and ask a question of Kat or just to comment on how awesome we all are, you can get in touch with us on SMS, which is 0427JOY949, or you can email us on onair@joy.org.au. You can even drop a message on our Facebook page, which is www.facebook.com//SomethingOrOther/Triple Bypass. I think we're going to get
a good
song.
Backlash.
Backsplash.
This is Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9, and you're here with Anthony,
Ruby,
and Christina,
and our special guest.
Hi, I'm C.S. Paquette.
That's right, that's C.S. Paquette, the author of the Captive Prince trilogy books, and she's a member of our bisexual family as well. So welcome again.
Hey, fam.
I admitted something to you, and I felt very ashamed of admitting this to you because you are such a brilliant writer, and I don't read fiction, and I want to read fiction.
Do you consume kind of fiction media like TV and films and stuff?
Yes. I don't have to think though. I don't necessarily have to concentrate.
It's a bit
when
more
I'm
passive.
Yeah. Sex in the City, that kind of fiction.
See, I read these books very quickly because while they have a lot of information in them, you can get through them quite quickly. Like, you know, because the writing is really smooth and there's no, like, really heavy paragraphs that involve a lot of unlocking. Like, there aren't, like, you know, two pages describing a meadow like Tolkien used to does and stuff like that. So I would recommend them. But also, I heard you were Googling our guest during the break, Anthony.
I was. And one very interesting fact about you is that you're a geologist.
I trained as a geologist. Yes, that's right. But I'm not actually sure how interesting that is. I think geology can be fantastically boring at times.
Right.
Yeah, when I was a geologist, my friends banned me from talking about rocks. So right. I've learned to...
I love talking about rocks. No, yeah. Awesome. You're a scientist. So yeah. I think that's really exciting. And does that, I mean, because I think about your place in the world and the way you're expressing yourself, I guess, through your books. And I'm just wondering, are these things all connected?
I'm not sure how much they're connected, except possibly with in terms of writing process, where I tend to be like very process driven rather than just giving myself up to the creative flow, as right. I know some authors can do. Whereas I'm much more of I sit down, I'll plot meticulously, I'll plan a series out, and then I'll kind of execute the plan in a very kind of calculated way.
Okay. So there's a method here.
Yeah, I guess there is a method. But
do you do like a storyboard? Like, do you have all the events like planned out?
I do have a storyboard. Yeah.
Such a geologist.
Yeah.
Now, before the show, off air, Ruby was telling me that you started with your writing by doing fan fiction. Is that correct?
Yeah, I wrote fan fiction probably from the age of sort of as a young teenager all the way through to my early 20s. And one reason for that was just that I was so hungry for queer content. Mm-hmm. And at that time, kind of in the mid to late 90s, there just wasn't that much on commercial bookshelves. But what I found was that in the online space, there was this really vibrant community of often kind of queer writers who were sharing stories with each other, absorbing... heterosexual mainstream media and then queering it for kind of often consumption by other queer readers.
Mostly women as well. Like they say, over 90% of fan fiction on the internet. And there is a lot of fan fiction on the internet. It's written by women.
Yeah. I love a good slash fan fiction, honestly.
I wrote my first fan fiction on a pack of post-it notes and it was about Angel from Buffy.
Oh, yeah.
Angel and Spike.
Yeah. Oh, I've had... I don't need to write fan fiction about the fantasies I've had about that.
Now, we have got a message in from Gemma from Garden Vale saying, great to hear from a successful out bi person. I think so too.
Thanks, Gemma.
And other people can get in touch with us too, but I haven't got the number in front of me.
If you'd like to do so, please do send us a text on 0427JOY949 or send us an email onair@joy.org.au.
So if you've got any questions for Kat or for us, you can also go to our Facebook page, which is you just search Triple Bypass, and we should rock up with a very fancy logo designed by Christina.
Look, I'm just the powerhouse artist of the group. Let's just be honest about that.
Right,
speaking of powerhouse talents, I would like to announce to you all with great pride and excitement that our very own Ruby Susan has been nominated for a People's Choice Award at the Globe Awards this year. For her volunteer work here at Joy FM, Joy 94.9. I'm just like losing my nana.
I lost my nana a bit today as well.
I'm all over social media just going, my friend got nominated, everybody!
Yeah, so in case our listeners don't know, the Globes are Victorian awards for LGBTI members of the community that have been achieving things for the community. And so this is the People's Choice. Someone nominated me, and I was chosen, and it's extremely exciting.
Pretty bloody good.
Yeah.
Though I need votes, so.
She does need votes. But the reason why she was nominated is because Ruby does an awful lot of work in just getting the LGBTI voice out there. I mean, she works on The Informer here at Joy 94.9. And she's on this show, which we're all very, very passionate about, to give bisexual people more visibility here in Melbourne, and considering you can stream it online also overseas in the rest of Australia. So it's actually really, really important stuff that she's been doing to give young LGBTI plus people a voice on one of the few platforms that we have. So she gets my vote because of that. And if you think that's also awesome, please vote for her as well.
Having a lot of feelings.
Great work, Ruby.
Thank you.
And speaking of giving greater visibility to queer voices, C.S. Paquette is with us. And can I just ask, what sort of response have you had with your writing from the mainstream or from, the queer community, have claimed you?
Yeah, it's been really amazing. When I started out writing this book, I actually started it as an online serial, just because when I looked around, as I said, there wasn't really necessarily anything like it, at least not in the mainstream commercially published space. And I just assumed a story like this this is not a book. So I wrote online probably for about 3 years. And at the end of that time, it had gained so much popularity through word of mouth as like an online serial that that I started to think like, oh, maybe I can get this published. And I spammed agents, I spammed publishers. And I think the kindest response that I got at that time was, we just don't think that there's a market for this book. But because I had so many readers asking for a copy that I eventually self-published. And it turned out that there was a market. Within 24 hours of the book being self-published, it was hitting number one across categories on Amazon. There was so much word of mouth that it started to pick up reviews from mainstream review sites. I think the first of which was a really positive review from USA Today. And as a result of that, a US agent approached me and she said, I think we can sell this book to a Big Six publisher in New York. And I sort of said, well, no, you can't. Like, I've already tried to do that and been knocked back. But she was really positive. We ended up getting two offers, the most robust of which was from Penguin. And and the book went on to become a USA Today bestseller in the States. So
can I ask how many copies have been sold?
I actually don't have the final tally, but I will be finding out at the end of this year. But it's sold in multiple countries now, and it's done really, really well.
There's some amazing cover art as well. Like I think Japan is one of the countries where it's taken off as well. And so I love some of their covers.
Oh, their covers are amazing.
I've actually just taken a photo of the cover. I'll put it up on the Triple Bypass Facebook. So
and
you can see
the Japanese version also has interior illustrations, which is so exciting for me. Right.
I want to see that now.
I mean, lots of reasons to stop and not continue, and yet you kept going. And I was just wondering about that internal sort of resilience and drive to sort of keep going.
Yeah, I think it's interesting looking back. Like, people will often talk about gatekeeping in the publishing industry, but I can really tell within myself that maybe the gatekeeping can happen first in your own mind, because I did think at the beginning, well, this isn't a book, something like this isn't a book. And I often wonder how many artists out there were kind of limiting ourselves based on perceptions of the industry or perceptions of the market. But my experience has really been that if you just go for it, you know, the people are really hungry for this kind of content. And so, you know, I would encourage anyone who's interested in kind of making queer art to just kind of get out there and start doing it.
We are still here with C.S. Bacat, fantasy author, a queer fantasy author. Thanks for joining us, Kat.
Hi, guys.
Now, we have a message for you. Of course, anyone can message us in.
On 0427 Joy 949.
Or you can email us on air@joy.org.au.
Now, this question comes from Alan from Altona. What is C.S. Bacat going to write next?
Authors always get asked that, don't they?
But it's the best question that you could possibly be asked.
Cool.
So, hi, Alan. So my next series is actually going to be young adult fantasy. I'm hoping that it's going to maintain a lot of the really intense kind of character dynamics that that Captive Prince had, but just in a different genre. And I suppose, unlike Captive Prince, it will also have magic as an element as well, so it'll be sort of more true fantasy in that respect.
And less erotica, I'm guessing.
Really? Yeah. I was about to ask the big question, will it have the sex?
I think it will have... Well, who? No spoilers. No spoilers this early. But so I think, what I hope it will have is the same sort of levels of intensity. So it will have sort of a lot of the same energies.
Is it going to be a male-on-male romance again?
I don't think it's going to be a romance specifically, but it will have romance in it, yeah.
And again, is it going to be around two male characters as Captive Prince?
Well, it's still sort of in the planning stage, so I don't want to commit to too much at the moment.
Are there plans? I know that Captive Prince is, because Ruby's told me, I haven't read the books because I suck, but Ruby's told me that it does focus around two male characters.
Right.
Are there any plans to do a similar series with female characters in mind?
I would love to do that at some point, yeah.
Awesome. Because that's what I miss sometimes, is really good, juicy, you know, female-driven lesbian / bisexual women. Just
right. There's only so many times you can reread Fingersmith.
Well, exactly. You know, and I've read Tipping the Velvet like 40,000 times.
Right, exactly.
Because I was thinking, because like I grew up reading Tamora Pierce, who wrote a whole series of fantasy like books in sets of four. They were all around these amazing like female heroines, and so when I was reading Captive Prince, I was like, I want this, but with ladies.
But yeah, this again. Definitely. And I know, sort of like, I will pretty much read or watch anything as long as it has a kind of focal bisexual character. So I must have read, like, you know, I'll read 6-book series just because it has one bi character that fleetingly flits in and out of the story at some times, like Magnus, for example. Or, you know, I've watched all of Lost Girl, which I can't say I necessarily fully enjoyed that show, but because having a bisexual female protagonist was so amazing. Ditto, like The 100 or what else?
Orange is the New Black.
Right. Or even, I'll even watch really terrible shows all through the end. Like, I watch all of Revenge.
Exactly.
This really highlights the need that we have for representation in the media. I mean, not just gay and lesbian representation, but there is so few bisexual characters in any kind of media that we have available to us.
Right. Did I just name all of them?
I think you got pretty close. I'm trying to like think of any more, and I'm just drawing a few blanks.
And you know, the last time that I saw a bisexual character on television was The L Word. And even then, the bisexual character there was like, you know, turned gay at the end.
And all of her friends were constantly saying, oh, when are you going to make up your mind? And that was kind of all part of her story.
Yeah.
You know, I actually read tragedy. This. There are more lesbians who later on realize they're bi than bi people who realize they're lesbians.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah, which you would not expect from the stereotypes and from what people talk about. And actually, before we were talking, Kat, you mentioned that you'd never really been in a room with full of just bi people before.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Yeah. Can you feel the bi vibes?
Well, we've got one gay person in here, but, you know, he's an honorary bi.
He's not allowed to talk.
I listened to the podcasts of the show before I came in, and I thought, I'll just listen to one just to sort of find out what the show is about. And I found myself listening to the entire backlist just because I never really sort of listened to bi-focused media in that way before. And I experienced a feeling of like, oh, this is what they say when they say there's not really like, it's not easy to find a bisexual community, because I did feel a feeling of community, but I realized it's lack.
We are your
daily
people.
And you know, and that gives us the feels like you wouldn't believe. Ruby and I were talking before, just going, this is exactly what we wanted to achieve with this show.
I think the lack of community is one of the most difficult things about being bisexual. And I think also one of the reasons why we seem to have such terrible mental health across the board and have such a, like, I think, you know, less than 30% of bisexual people actually come out to their friends and family.
And yet we make up around about 50% of the LGBTI rainbow.
LGB
just rainbow, the sexuality rather. Rainbow. Just a sexuality rainbow, sorry. Yeah. But yeah, it's so there's a lot of us that won't come out because of that fear of discrimination within our own community. And that sucks. We shouldn't be having that in our community.
Yeah, I found it really interesting what you said about both lesbians and straight women coming out as bi, because I did, growing up, experience some kind of pressure to commit one way or the other, which I think sometimes bisexual people can be very vulnerable to, which began for me sort of feeling like at the beginning everything about my opposite sex attraction was really reinforced by outside media and expectations and sort of like this feeling of like, oh, that's my real sexuality, and the other one's sort of just like a shadow sexuality but then once I sort of embraced the fact that, you know, I did also experience same-sex attraction, then there was sort of this feeling of like, oh, well, to then be part of the queer community, does that mean I have to renounce my opposite sex attraction? And so I can see why you might find it hard to come out one way or the other.
It's interesting. I was talking to a young gay girl not so long ago who, and we were talking about sexuality as happens, and she said, yeah, I went through my bisexual stage, and I, of course, jumped on that, and my wife is there at a time, she just started laughing, and I said, why do you call it a stage? And she's like, oh, you know, because I was, and she had the thing of like, you know, wasn't entirely sure about my sexuality, didn't know that if my attraction to men was because it was media driven or because that was expected, and I said, that's cool, that's fine, can you call it your questioning dating stage, because bisexuality is actually a legitimate sexuality. It's a legitimate thing that people come out as.
Yeah.
So instead of calling it my bisexual stage, call it your questioning stage. We're all allowed to have questioning stages. You know, and I think it's really important for us to actually own that term back again, irrespective of all the negative connotations that go along with it, and to say, yeah, this is, it's legitimate and it's actual and I'm proud.
We're very, we are real. We exist.
We are real and we exist. If we knock on your door,
you will see hopefully.
But there's always that explaining stage too, isn't there? And I guess that's what was happening there. We're constantly explaining it to people. And I just wondered if that's been your experience as well, that you have to sort of clear things up from time to time.
Yeah, definitely. In fact, I sort of, I went down the path of like, oh, no labels, you know, just,
we've all been there.
Whatever you want to be. And then it wasn't until very recently when I had to start kind of I had to start doing media interviews that I even really sort of realized like, oh no, I have to, I can't just use this vague word queer because it won't necessarily be understood. I'm actually bisexual and I need to sort of be really open about talking about that. But I thought, oh, bisexual is just going to be so much more easily understandable than queer. But actually, even bisexual sort of needed translation and explanation. It wasn't necessarily like the simple word that I thought it was going to be. Yeah,
I find what some of my friends who've recently kind of discovered their own bisexuality have gone through is one of my guy friends was like, he's like, if he doesn't feel exactly 50-50, can he call himself bisexual and that sort of thing. And, you know, being like, oh, you can, and having to talk to him and be like, it doesn't matter if it's 10 and 90% of the same sex and opposite sex attraction, that it's all still fine. You're legitimate. It doesn't, it's not like, you know, we're not going to be testing you and color coding the parts of you that are bi and that aren't and saying, well, that's not quite enough for us. So you don't get to call yourself that anymore. Here on Triple Bypass, we have been talking queer fantasy and, of course, bisexuality and all that that involves. We've just got another message in from Mary from the CBD. Teen, do you have good bidar for finding other bi people?
No. My bidar is absolutely terrible. I can tell someone's bi when they tell me they're bi.
Yes. Or if someone is holding both a man's hand and a woman's hand, then I might be like, that person could be bisexual.
If they're holding a sign above their heads or have it tattooed on their forehead, I'm bisexual. That's usually a good giveaway.
But I think I've talked about this before, so sorry, but they're in a lot of our society, people are coded as straight until proven otherwise. And then generally, if you're coded as gay, and then so if you're coded as straight, then you're coded as gay if you're in same-sex couples. And from being gay, that's the default if you're not straight. So if you're anything but gay and not straight, that involves further explanation and further deconstruction. And I don't think society is quite at that point yet.
Do you know what the cool thing is, though, is that when I come out to people, like friends who I'm, you know, just getting to know, and I get the, oh, really? I'm bi too. Like, yes!
Yeah.
Yes!
And Kat, that's how I felt with you in the studio, for among other things. But I think that, you know, and I guess I'm making assumptions, but when I hear about other people being bi, I hear about a very perhaps similar story that we can all share, you know, as we've talked about those explanations and you know, we all have our own struggle with sort of trying to sort of fight against heteronormativity.
Has someone asked you for a threesome?
We've all had that question.
Right.
Yes, we have. Yes, right. We have all had that question, guys.
Right.
But it is, I think, and as Anthony's saying, I think finding out that those experiences are so universal across people who identify as bisexual is really, is it affirming? I don't know. When you were listening, was it like, oh, I know what they're talking about. That's
yeah,
how
it was really affirming. There was so much that I identified with. Although I have to say, like, interestingly, I went through a lot of my early life just assuming that everyone was bi. I think in that
oh,
sort
that's
of,
awesome.
That sort of just youthful, like, I just assume everyone is like I am.
Yeah.
And I still have, in probably in much the same way that, say, a straight writer will unthinkingly populate their book only with straight characters, I have a real trouble not making all my characters just thoughtlessly bi. Yeah.
I don't think that's trouble or a problem.
And I have to sort of work to make characters be like straight or gay identified.
Well, that sounds like the promised land.
Yeah.
You know, when politicians tell us or extremist group leaders say that we should all like be put on an island somewhere, or the gay, lesbian and queer people should be put on an island. I'm like, can you?
Mykonos, please.
Yes, can you please just put us on an island?
Like, and then the bisexuals would be like, you know, on the boat ferrying between the two.
Yeah, totally.
We'll be waving just like that too.
It works for all of us. I mean, it just works. So, yeah. Can we do that?
I don't think they realise how much we'd actually just enjoy each other's company. Yeah. You know, it's like we're talking about like a gay bachelorette. I'm like, what's to stop all of the contestants just falling in love with each other?
Yep.
Well, I guess we all struggle, but we all celebrate and have fun too. And Kat, I'm just wondering, was queer writing one sort of an outlet to be able to sort of process some of that stuff, or was that coming from another place?
Yeah, it was definitely an outlet. I think for me, writing was both a way of expressing sexuality and identity that I couldn't express in my daily life, but it was also a means by which I could connect with a community of like-minded people. And I think that was something that I felt probably a bit isolated from, especially growing up. So especially when I was sort of an adolescent and young teenager, I didn't necessarily know anyone in the queer community. And I felt very solitary. So a lot of my touchstones were not people that I knew or sort of like real life icons that I could look up to. They were characters in a book or characters on my TV or in film. So
what was the first thing you did write? How old were you when you first wrote a story?
Apart from like just a school project or something along those lines, the first thing that I wrote for myself, I was probably about 12, and it was one of those I'm a special magical girl stories. It was just one of those where the main character was super powered and could do no wrong. Yep. It was just sort of like, yeah, it was just, I guess it was an unabashed power fantasy on my part as a 12-year-old girl, of which I later learned to be ashamed. So sort of pulled back from writing those kinds of narratives.
I don't think you need to be ashamed of when you're 12 of wanting to write those self-insert kind of powerful characters.
Yeah, I mean, I think thing. I agree, and I think they're really powerful and important. But it was really easy to kind of absorb the idea that I perhaps should be ashamed or whatever. So it wasn't it wasn't until then I was a bit older even again than that, maybe in my 20s, that I went back to kind of these more, how can I say, these fantasies that more kind of tapped your deepest desires or your most, the kinds of things you don't necessarily talk about in public or you can feel shy or vulnerable to share with others.
Well, I guess it's very consistent with, you know, I guess your psychosexual development and understanding that you sort of, as children, don't necessarily notice or pick up on those things. And then you get hit puberty and all sorts of things start to happen. You start to notice and pay attention to the world differently. It sounds like there was a bit of a parallel process there with your writing and your experience.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think our adolescence is the time that we're, we feel at our most exposed. You know, they say that that's the age where you assume that everyone's looking at you and watching what you're doing. It's probably not an accident that all of those like young adult fantasies are often have a main character that's being like Hunger Games, where it's a character in an amphitheater being stared at by hundreds of spectators, because that's the feeling of adolescence.
Well, especially now when, you know, we're putting our lives up on social media and like are expected to do so to a point.
Right. Exactly. I think probably too, that was the time when I felt the most awkward about my sexuality. I was having a lot of sort of nascent sexual experiences that I wasn't processing properly, because any kind of same-sex sexual experiences or feelings that I was having, I was sort of processing as, oh, that's not really real. Only my opposite of sex attraction is real.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe I fantasize about boobs, but that's just because women are taught to objectify other women or...
Boobs are great.
Yeah, right. Boobs are great. maybe I, you know, kissed a girl, but that's just like having a girl crush or fooling around, or all these terms that we're taught that kind of devalue, I guess, female sexual experiences.
Gal pals.
Yeah, gal pals. Yeah, girl crush, all that kind of stuff. Yeah,
I remember being a preteen and hugging my best friend and someone walking in on us and me breaking away from her very suddenly because I didn't want to be thought that I was, you know, that we were lesbian lovers or something.
Because you identified as a lesbian first, didn't you, Christina?
No, I came out as bisexual first.
Excellent. Because you mentioned like you had your awakening with cartoons with girls.
Yeah, yeah. And look, I was just thinking about the writing stories and stuff. As I wrote as a kid too, but I had a very active fantasy life, and I told stories in my head. And I had three Barbie dolls and a Ken doll, and two of the Barbies were bisexual, and one was a lesbian. So even Brilliant. Back then. Brilliant.
Is Ken the lesbian?
He wishes.
It's like a 70-30 ratio.
Well, that's what I am, so, you know. But that knowledge that I was, I mean, that it was so obviously deeply ingrained in who I am, which is another indicator that we are born this way. Thank you. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I had already learnt shame about that kind of thing. So I did everything that I could in my social life to not... And because I grew up with a gay dad as well, so I was very, very aware of difference, very aware of otherness, was a gay activist, but couldn't be seen as being gay myself because I wasn't quite strong enough to defend myself, but I was strong enough to defend my dad.
Right.
So it like I knew from the get-go that I was differently... sexualized, I guess you could say, or that I saw myself as not straight, but took a very long time to be brave enough actually to admit that to myself, much less other people, to go, actually, yeah, these fantasies I've been having since I was five about Wonder Woman because she was hot. Yes,
I love her.
Oh my God.
I love her so much.
Oh my God. And she was powerful and she was sexy and she was all this stuff. And yeah. Yeah.
I think the B is for brave.
The B is for brave.
Brave buys.
And you know what? If I was a kid, if I was a teenager and I had this kind of stuff to read, there were a few books around when I was a teenager, and this is going back to the 1980s, 1990s. There were a few books around here and there, but there was nothing to this extent that I could grab onto and go, there is a character who was just like me, that they share the same, you know, feelings that I do, and they're normal. Yeah. My gosh,
right. I think for a really long time too, any time that there was a queer character in fiction or in film and television, they always had like the quote-unquote queer narrative, which was like you realise that you're queer, you traumatically come out, after which you're doomed to live life on the worn fringes of social acceptability, and then at the end you tragically die.
Or your partner tragically
or
dies.
Or your partner tragically dies, yeah. And I think we're just moving to the stage where we sort of can understand like, oh yeah, you can have a queer character without having to import this narrative wholesale. Yep. They could have a hero's journey narrative or a mystery detective narrative or a romance narrative or any one of several narratives. So not that sort of like tragic... Mm-hmm. Stories don't have their place as well, but they could just be one part of sort of like a larger set of narratives that we can experience. So I think it's an exciting time now.
I've often actually said to, I've got a couple of filmmaker friends and I've said to them, please, can you just make a murder mystery where like the main person happens to be gay or bi or queer or transgender or something? Can you just do that?
Well, bisexuals play villains. They're the few roles we get cast as in television.
I want a hero.
I secretly actually really enjoy the sort of bisexual sociopath trope. ever since I've got a weak spot for it ever since Angelina Jolie in Girl Interrupted.
Yeah.
But she was a lovable sociopath.
She was, yeah.
I used to think Frasier and Niles were gay brothers, but they
were like not like Frasier is like my dad, but like a straight version of my dad, but a straight gay version of it's just I love that show because of that reason.
Yeah, straight gay. No, gay straight guys.
Gay straight guys. Yeah. Because my dad's a straight gay guy.
No, I like the idea of bisexuals who are completely removed from their emotions, or like, you know, are able to completely operate without emotion. That being said, it'd be nice if we could be friendly. But I think you're right. I think you're right, Kat. I think we are getting much better as far as saying queer lit doesn't need to be just about a tragic story. They can be fantasy, and they can be in sci-fi stories, and they can be detective novels, and it's so exciting.
It totally is.
Now we have to wind up. It has been so great having you on the show.
Oh, it's so great talking with you guys.
I'm going to have to have you back.
Yes. I would love that.
Let's do that. CS for Kat, author of the Captive Prince trilogy, which you can buy on Amazon. I'm Ruby.
I'm Anthony.
I'm Christina, and you're...
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.